Good afternoon and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today on this pretty beautiful day, as it turns out. Unsuspected beautiful day and a day of celebration here in Juno as celebration is happening, and we're going to learn all about the food of celebration today. Also, Catholic Community Services will give us an update, and we'll hear how to bike, swim, and run in Haynes Chilcat Challenge Triathlon. To wrap things up, K2 News News Director Jeremy Shea is going to be here to talk about highlights of news of the week. That's all coming up right after National Native News, right here on a Juno Afternoon for Friday. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Northern Arapaho Elder Society recently presented a statement at a public hearing expressing disapproval of Wyoming's grizzly bear hunt. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports the statement called such hunting an act of genocide against the species.
Elders Crawford White Sr. and Nelson White Sr. stated that as a sovereign nation, the federal government should have consulted them in the decision as required by law. Rocky Mountain Tribal Leadership Councilman Sergio Maldonado says his elders say that instead of hunting bears to control their population in Yellowstone, they should be moved to reservations like Wind River. He says, sure, that could impact farmers and ranchers on the reservation.
Should those bears come down and take out cattle, well, the law of the land is, you know, the owners of the cattle, the ranchers, kill the bears. But they have no problem in the grizzlies coming onto our reservation, because at least we know they're protected.
Maldonado says the council requested the statement as a show of respect for the Northern Arapaho's unique elder society.
The other tribes recognize our old men, the elder society, as extremely legitimate, as foundationally spiritual in that old way.
The Northern Arapaho are only one of a handful of tribes to be officially governed by its elders this way. Maldonado presented the elder's statement to the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission, but he says the statement didn't change the vote on grizzly hunting.
It's already written in the stars as to what they were going to do. This was nothing more than a political and duplicitous public hearing.
Maldonado says the elders feel trophy hunting is unethical and sacrilegious. He says they've also requested he submit their statement to Wyoming's Governor Matt Mead as well. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Melody Edwards.
The Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde are celebrating the return of 16 artifacts from Europe. As KLCC's Brian Bull explains, the items are back after nearly 120 years, but not permanently.
Between 1870 and 1910, two men, Minister Robert Summers and Indian agent Dr. Andrew Kershaw, acquired various baskets and bowls from the tribal members they served. A colleague eventually bought the artifacts and gifted them to London's British Museum. Now those objects are on display at the Grand Ronde Tribe's own museum. David Harrelson is the Tribal Cultural Resources Manager. He says in a year, they'll go back to London.
Yeah, the objects will go back. We'll retain 3D scans of the objects, which we'll be able to use. To us, you know, the important thing to retain is the cultural practices that go along with them. We're interested in living things and being a living culture, not a dead culture.
The tribe has worked for two decades to reacquire the artifacts. Part of the efforts involved upgrading and expanding the tribal museum. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
A shelter was set up Thursday on the Mescalero Apache Reservation in New Mexico due to the Soldier Canyon fire. As of early Friday morning, the fire had burned more than 2,500 acres. The evacuation site is at the Mescalero Apache Community Center. Tribal offices are closed as crews battle the blaze. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs this week favorably reported the nomination of Tara Sweeney to serve as Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs at the Interior Department. It passed by a voice vote and now goes to the full Senate for consideration. Sweeney, who's Alaska Native, was tapped by the Trump administration in October. The Indian Affairs Committee held a hearing on her nomination in May. Ranking members of the committee are urging the Senate to move swiftly to confirm her. The National Congress of American Indians is also calling for final approval. NCAI says the vacancy of a leader for Indian Affairs at the federal agency has caused undue stresses on the government-to-government relationship with tribes. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Indigenous Environmental Network's Protecting Mother Earth Conference, June 28th through July 1st. Indigenous peoples are standing up to those treating their territories, waters, and lands as sacrifice zones for profit. Registration at ienearth.org. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for this station comes from listeners like you and COPA, a handcrafted ice cream and coffee shop serving organic Sentinel coffee and with a cart downtown during the summer season. Ice cream flavors, online ordering, and more at coppa.biz.
As we head into June, we want to let you know that KTOO is raising the final $40,000 needed this fiscal year in membership support. Anything you can contribute will make a big difference. Increase your monthly giving, make an additional gift, or sign on for the very first time. The money you give is spent on creating and broadcasting everything you depend on from KTOO. So give now, as generously as you can, at ktoo.org.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein, your host today, and have the pleasure of being joined by Donald Bolton and Marlene Johnson. Thanks to both of you for coming.
Our Thank pleasure.
You. Marlene, you're someone who is really one of the helps organize celebration in your work with Sea Alaska Heritage. So tell me a little bit. We're going to talk to Donald, who's done some great work in the culinary areas here. But tell me a little bit about the organization of celebration, what that takes every couple of years to bring that together.
Well, probably within 2 months, some of our staff will start working on Celebration 2020.
Is that right? There's a two-month break.
Yes.
And that's it. Wow.
We have already selected, and I cannot announce it, but the 2020 host, it'll be announced tomorrow.
Okay.
And it goes on with the staff primarily. We at the Board of Trustees tell them what we want, and they do it.
And who's the 2018 host?
The Klukwan, Shungu Katie, and the Koho of clans of Klawak, Haines, Juneau.
Okay. So every year a different clan or group of clans are picked to be the
or
host.
Or community, yes.
Or community, okay.
So, yes. Yeah, we try to select so that everybody has an opportunity to be there and get the headline in the parade and the headline on stage and that kind of stuff. So.
And just as an overview, about how long, or maybe you know exactly, but how long celebration, how long has it been going on?
First celebration was held in 1982.
Okay. And 2022 will be a big year, a big anniversary
yes.
year.
Yes.
That'll be cool in 4 years.
Yeah. It's about 38 years we've been doing it now. So we've had, 36 years, I think,
right.
And we've had 18 celebrations.
Right. Okay, 18. Yeah, every 2 years, right. And what was the impetus for it beginning?
To save our culture. The importance of our knowing that it needed to be saved. And at that time, we were doing a lot of work with trying to get the state of Alaska to recognize that the Alaska Native people were important to this state and that they did have a culture and it was worth saving. And so, yeah, Byron Mallant was one of the instigators of it and came. Yeah, I was the chairman of Sea Alaska Corporation at the time, and he came to me as the chairman and he wanted to do it. It took a bit of convincing for me to think we should spend our money that way, but he got together with some elders and went down to Ketchikan and met, and they agreed that it needed to be done, and rest is history.
It is history because as someone who, I moved to the state in 1991, and to me it just felt like something that must have been happening for decades and decades and decades, but even at that point it was only 9 years old.
Right.
And was sort of a reemergence and reassertion of the culture.
We came out of a period before that that segregation was an absolute. And if you had any non-native blood in you, you could not go to the government schools. You had to go to the territorial schools. Then after the statehood and what have you, then they merged the schools. And there still was not so much segregation, but discrimination. And that went on. And it took a long time to get us to the point that we were able to convince the outside world that our culture is not bad. It was a thing of celebration. And we would do these ceremonies, not a celebration, but in our villages by our clans, ourselves. And that was the importance, the pride and the happiness you felt when you were doing it is why Byron said, we've got to bring this out. This is wonderful. And we did. And you see the little kids dancing now? The little kids would never have been in public with any regalia on them or saying one word in their native language.
It's an amazing time right now to just walk around town. People are walking around in regalia. As you say, children and, you know, the obvious pride, it's a really special time just to be able to live in Alaska and live in Juneau and see that happening when it's happening here. Yeah.
When I saw those kids yesterday, the little boys from Yakutat that were their grandfather came from Huna, that to see them dancing the way they did, perfect timing, just really going, that I thought to myself, everything we've done the last 30 years has been worth it when I see that. It's just absolutely worth it. That's
really
what we're after.
Yeah. So celebration, of course, people who are familiar with it at all or watch it on 360 North or see it streamed, you see, of course, the dancing, amazing regalia, music. But some of the maybe lesser-known things, one of them, and one of the things I think the people that really look forward to when they come to celebration is the food,
well,
right?
I just
always
want to
the
say
food.
This.
Yes.
We all have to eat, but
yes.
The dancing and singing and the language is part of the culture and helps make the culture. But we would have no culture without our natural foods, the fish, the rest of the foods off the beaches, the deer. We would not have a culture without our food. And thank goodness young people like Donald Bolton here is still doing it. You know, I do a lot of canning, what have you. But I'm not a seal grease maker like he is. I've tried about it. I wouldn't take it to a contest.
Well, let's talk about it. Don, you actually, you're holding them in your hands, the well-deserved awards. You got three awards in the celebration this year. Tell me what dishes and what items you won for.
Well, I got first place for seal oil with cracklings, which is the fat when you're rendering the seal oil down. You save the cracklings. Some people like them. Some people don't. Obviously, some people like them real well because they got first place. And then there's just the seal oil. And then I also won, much to my surprise, the black seaweed contest.
Okay, cool. Now, seal oil. Let's talk about the uses of seal oil. What are some of the uses?
Well, you could put it in with fish chowder added
so
in there.
Just as a flavoring element?
Just as a flavoring. You can use it for dipping your dry fish.
Put it on your rice.
Put it on your rice.
So it's sort of a garnish.
It's kind of a garnish. Yeah.
Flavoring. It's not used for cooking. It's not an oil that you would use for cooking.
No,
okay.
No.
It's lightly used for garnishing different things.
It's the seasoning. Though.
And how would you describe the flavor of seal oil to someone who's never tried seal oil?
It'd be like trying to ask somebody what the crawfish tastes like.
Yeah,
I guess.
Okay.
So,
okay. Well, I would say it's rich. It's certainly a rich oil.
Yeah.
And kind of I get a fish kind of flavor out of it. You know.
You can. Yeah. It depends on how long people age it. Some people age it up to a week before they start rendering it. Some of us wait a couple of days. People do it right away.
And is part of the process for you capturing the seal as well, getting the seal as well?
That's part of the requirements to enter the food contest. You have to harvest it, process it yourself. You can't go and buy it from somebody and enter it, which kind of reinforces the harvesting, gathering type thing that a lot of us do out in the villages. So.
Something you've always done your whole life?
Yes, since I was very young.
Yeah, and did you always also do the cooking side of it since you were very young, or did you kind of go into that later?
No, actually, I never had seal until I moved to Hoonah in 1983. So, actually, on the certificates that they gave me, they have Metlakatla, and I'm originally from Metlakatla, but I live in Hoonah, so...
Should it be a slash there, or should it just
should
be Hoonah?
It be a slash or a cross out.
Hoonah. Just Hoonah. I knew you were going to say that. Right.
I'll take slash and Hoonah. How's that?
Okay. Give Metlakatla credit.
I've got to give Metlakatla credit. My grandfather showed me how to hunt and fish and process some of the fish. Actually, in Metlakatla, not a whole lot of people eat seal.
What are some of the other categories of foods? Maybe not the ones that you particularly... meddled in, but what are some of the other categories that are out there?
Soap berries.
And soap berries is kind of a very, that's a real staple I've seen soap berry kind of jams and things like that for years and years, right?
It doesn't make the best jam.
Oh, it doesn't? Okay.
No, but soap berries, and you take your jar. I mean, I froze some this year to try, and it worked. But we harvest soap berries. They are in particular areas. Around Hoonah, you have to go over by Glacier Bay.
Okay.
Around here, up above Haines, north of Haines, into the Yukon Territory, all over. My husband and I pick a lot of soap berries as we drive up and down the highway. And I jar them. And this past year, I froze them. But you jar them, and you just... takes several teaspoons of soap berries, and you whip them and put sugar in them, and bananas makes them really good. You whip bananas in with
smooths them. Smooths
them out. Don't forget to add a little bit of water.
Yeah, a little bit of water when you're starting. Just very little, but a little.
Yeah.
And it works great. Today, a lady gave me from the interior of Canada, gave me a jar. They were dancing. She gave me a jar of soap berries. But they had a lot of liquid. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do, whether I'm just going to take that and not add water and see if that works.
Because
it looks like they use water in canning.
And does every single person have a different way of preparing stuff? Or does it go clan to clan? Is community to community? Mm-hmm. Are there different ways to deal with these kind of, like the raw materials? Are there different things that different areas are really known for in Southeast? Or...
A lot of it's individual, how they were trained, what their tastes are.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned, with seal fat, some people age them. That gives it a stronger flavor. Some people like the stronger flavor. Others,
Are you more of the lighter flavor?
More of the lighter flavor, yeah.
So am I. Yeah. I think it tastes so good, the light flavor.
Yeah.
And it works wonderful to put on, like, your vegetables and cook seaweed and put that on.
What are the other things that you get the most excited about when you think about, okay, celebration's coming up. I know there's going to be lots of different foods. What are some of the ones that you key on or the ones that go quick?
Smoked salmon strips.
Okay.
They are absolutely wonderful. I'm sure Donald makes them.
Like the belly strips, kind of, or more like
that, both the belly and the belly's great because of the
fat content.
Right. But sockeye strips, they don't come any better.
That's fun.
And we use all of them: dog salmon, smoked dog salmon, dried cole, dried halibut, and sun dried halibut. If you can dry it in the sun. It's just tender and so good. So when I was a kid, I used to love to get dried halibut from Yakutat. The Yakutat dried halibut was the best because they had a lot more sun than we do down here, and they would dry it in the sun and be so tender, melt in your mouth. Yeah.
Well, celebration is just that. It's a celebration of the heritage of the native peoples of Southeast Alaska. And then tell me a little bit about other – it's become more and more of a gathering even outside of Southeast. Is that kind of correct, right? People are coming in from Canada and other areas?
Alaska Natives, not only Alaska Natives, but we have the Yukon Territory, you know, the other – but we have a lot of Tlingits that live like in Masset and Carcross and what have you. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of others, Athabascans. We've had Athabascans group. We've had groups from Nome. We've had groups from Hawaii. And we've had inquiries from other areas. And as we find out what people are out there and, you know, whether they could come and whether they'd be entertaining, et cetera, whether we invite them. But we invite all of the Alaska Native groups have groups and want to come.
Well, have a great rest of the celebration. Donald, congratulations on winnings, the pride of getting those three acknowledgments of your work. And I would say you got to keep entering now. Now you're locked in.
Now I'm locked in. Now I have to defend it in 2 years.
You have to defend it.
That's right. Got to defend it. That's a rule. Well, Marlene, thanks so much. And Donald, thanks so much for coming in, telling us a little bit about the celebration. Congratulations again, and have a great rest of the weekend.
And I hope people come to celebration, or at least watch it or listen to it on TV and on the internet.
Yeah, 360 North is where they can view it all, and all of it's being covered as well. But if you're here in town, there's nothing like going down and seeing it in person.
It's very exciting.
Yeah,
it's fun.
All right, thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Move me.
If you encounter a marine mammal that is injured, entangled, or dead, please contact NOAA Fisheries Alaska Marine Mammal Stranding Network. Rescue attempts can be dangerous for both rescuers and the animal, so do not approach or attempt to assist injured or entangled marine mammals on your own. Prompt reporting is the best way to help distressed animals. To report a marine mammal stranding or entanglement, call the NOAA Fisheries Stranding Hotline at 1-877-925-7773.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein, your host, and being joined by Aaron Walker-Tolis and Kelsey Wood of Catholic Community Services. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thanks
so much.
Appreciate
it. And we want to talk about two different things, right?
Well, it's all one big thing, because we're all one big loving agency. There's the me stuff and the Kelsey stuff.
Okay, so we'll start with you, Aaron. What's the you stuff?
The me stuff. Okay, so we're Catholic Community Service, and just whenever I come on the air, I just want to remind folks who we are, because we're a lot bigger than people think we are, and so much of what we do, folks don't realize sometimes that it's all us.
And I think that the one thing that happens is that there's people who interact with lots of different agencies that's under that umbrella,
mm-hmm.
and so they know you just as that agency.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, but you didn't know we operated this, and you operate this.
Exactly.
So it's always fun to kind of think about that. And It's kind of amazing how much work you guys do.
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, I think we're awesome, but then again, you know, I work there. So, I mean, people think of us in terms of the senior centers. We've got 10 senior centers across Southeast Alaska, and people in Juneau sometimes don't realize that we're a regional faith-based nonprofit. And so we're boots on the ground in 9 other communities throughout Southeast Alaska with senior centers. We do Meals on Wheels. People really remember Meals on Wheels. And then the Congregate Meals. And, of course, paratransit, too. So, like Caravan here in Juneau, that's us. That's Catholic Community Service. Caravan in Sitka. We do rides. Everywhere we have a senior center, we also do rides for seniors and individuals who are disabled at no cost.
Tell me, just for one second, that Caravan, how do people get involved in getting that service?
You know, all they have to do is call us.
That's it.
There's a little form you fill out, but it's not painful.
That's why I wanted to bring it up, because I think that people think, oh, I have to be in a specific, senior center to use Caravan, or I have to, or I have to prove that I have a disability or something. And it's more about, no, if you feel you need it, you probably need it.
You probably do. I mean, if you can't take the bus easily, reasonably, if you need help, if you can't get to the bus stop, call us. Just call us, and we'll help you work it out.
Are there general hours that Caravan works?
Actually, it's the same hours as the public bus. It's all the same hours as the bus. And that's the difference between paratransit and just rides. In Juneau and Sitka and Ketchikan, we run a true paratransit, which means we are legally ADA required to run the same route, the same hours as the bus service, but it's all on demand. So it's when you need it, and it's door-to-door with someone coming to your door, give you an arm just to make sure you don't slip and fall, making sure you get where you're going safely all the way to the door.
Such a great service. It really
is.
Every time I see that Caravan drive around, I go, that's awesome that we do that here. You know, it's
really
awesome.
Is. Yeah. And, you know, it connects so many people to the community that wouldn't normally be able to get out and about. And because we can take you anywhere you need to go, as long as it, within reason. I can't really drive you to the very, very end of the road.
Sorry.
but, you know, folks want to go to the beach for the day, you can do that. We'll take you to the beach.
Wow, I didn't realize that. You can just call and kind of arrange it.
Just like you would the bus. So as long as it's around and about the bus route area, we'll take you there. So, you know, people want to get out in the summer. They want to it's a beautiful day, go to the beach, go to the woods, tell us where you're going to be. And nowadays everyone has cell phones anyway. You can just call us for pickup.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Well, Kelsey, let's hear what you want to talk about next.
I want to talk about a really exciting event we have coming up. We're doing our first annual summer wine tasting and silent auction event. It's a fundraiser for the Bridge Adult Day Program, which is a program of Southeast Senior Services, part of Catholic Community Service. It's going to be Friday, June 22nd. We're starting it at 5:30 p.m. It's at the Bridge Program, which is on 1803 Glacier Highway.
Now, to describe that building or where people might find that if they haven't seen it.
It's just down the street from the Aware Shelter, so sort of in between the high school and the hospital.
Okay, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's going to be $30 a ticket, $50 if you buy two. You can buy tickets on the Jack's website, at the Jack itself, Hearthside, Rainy Retreat. It's going to be a really fun event.
You working with like a distributor, one of the wine distributors?
Yeah, we got a couple local distributors coming in. Yep, we're going to have food, non-alcoholic beverages for people. Tom Loker's going to be playing some
light
classy jazz for us.
Very classy. I like that. So that's cool to bring in local distributors, because then you're really getting an education about wine when you come in and do these tastings.
Yeah, and we're trying to get some seasonal varieties in there, and
Are you helping develop the wine list?
No.
Oh, okay.
I would be no help.
That's what we're learning.
Yeah.
We're learning about that, right?
Yeah.
But that's fun, and it's also a nice. You're going to do it at the facility, which is cool, because then people can kind of get familiar with that facility.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a really fun way to do it. It's not, we'll be doing tours throughout the building, and it's just a good way to get acquainted with the bridge and what we do there.
So let's talk about that.
What do you do there? The Bridge is a program for people with Alzheimer's or dementia of any age, or people over the age of 60, anyone who's needing a little bit more socialization and stimulation during the day. We provide a full day of scheduled therapeutic activities from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. So that allows caregivers who have a job to be able to go to work and know that their loved one is safe and in a fun and stimulating environment. so they can continue to take care of themselves while they're taking care of a loved one.
Yeah, great. So that's really cool. That's happening again June 22nd, 5:30. It's at the Bridge Building itself. And again, $30 for one ticket, $50 for two. So go for it to $50. You can bring a friend.
Yeah, bring a friend.
It's a bargain.
Absolutely.
And then wine tasting, a little bit of snacks kind of too.
Yeah,
that kind
we're
going
to have a variety of cheeses.
Wine and cheese.
And domestic and imported cheese.
Domestic,
cheeses.
Individually wrapped American sliced cheeses.
The slices. You got it. It's all Kraft.
I like that.
All right.
That would actually be pretty amazing to show up with.
It's Wonder Bread and Kraft. That's Rochetta's, not Rochetta's, not a thing. I'm joking, of course.
No, the classy stuff. All classy. This sounds like a classy event. Yeah, this is going to be a good event. Good event. And then, so great. So the Bridge. We talked a little bit about Caravan there, but maybe a couple other programs that...
Well, you know, Hospice and Home Care of Juno is us, too. And folks are more and more aware of that, but some folks still don't realize that Hospice and Home Care of Juno is part of Catholic Community Service. And I think the other one that I'm trying to highlight more because it's got a kind of a low profile, and there's a reason for that, it's our Safe Child Advocacy Center. We do all the forensic interviews for children with suspected abuse and neglect happening. Law enforcement and Children's Services bring those kids to us. And see, we do those interviews. Of course, we have to interview siblings also. But it's done in a safe environment. It's done in a therapeutic way, in a non-traumatizing way. And because it's a huge collaboration, we've got so many partners. All those partners, Children's Services, law enforcement, the court system, everyone's involved. But the child only has to tell their story once. And so that partnership is just really beneficial to the whole family. And we also provide services to help the family through the whole process. You know, they have to go to court sometimes. Sometimes they need to find a new place to live that's safer. We help with that. And again, it's a true collaboration, but we've seen a huge increase in the number of kids referred to us. In the last year, that's increased 59%, and it's still growing. And so we're seeing that that's a huge need in the community. And we just want folks to be aware and to be aware of the signs. We also do education for schools, teachers, first responders. What to look for? What are the signs so you know when to make that call?
It's an interesting thing to think about how your organization sort of fills in these gaps.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just said, we're seeing a need for that. So there's a need, and then Catholic Community Services is one of these organizations that says, well, there's a need. It may be very difficult. We may not be, you know, it may be a tough subject. It may be that's, but we're going to fill in that gap. How do you decide on those things? How do you kind of come up with, or how do you become aware of new issues that need to be addressed?
Well, you know, it's listening to the community. Whenever I go out and talk to people, people will just come up to me and start telling me what the issue is, or I'm really worried about this, I'm concerned about that. Sometimes it comes to me through our program managers. Listen, we're seeing more and more of this kind of problem. We're seeing more kids with perpetrators who seem to have drug issues than in the past. And sometimes it's partners. A lot of it really is, though, we're not doing this by ourselves. It really is a community partnership in all the communities we serve. And so when we figure out, well, where do we need to go, community need is pretty easy to identify. Folks will tell you what the problem is, and people will speak out if you allow them the opportunity in the forum. And then it's going to our partners. Are you doing that already? Do you have that covered? What are you doing? What am I doing? Where's the gap? Because we really are part of just a giant network. And the intent is for all of us to work together, close those gaps up, don't duplicate services, but find out where the gaps are between what we do and fill those needs. And, you know, I think the wrong way to go about it, not necessarily the wrong, but a less successful way to go about it is just to follow the money. There's a grant for that. I'll go do that program. That's nice. And, yeah, we do that too. But ultimately, I think what should be the primary driver is what's needed in the community and then try to find a way to make that happen.
Well, a fun thing's going to be this summer wine tasting.
Yes.
Going to go
your tickets.
Do that. Buy the tickets. Now, how do the people get tickets?
On the Jack's website, at the Jack itself, Hearthside, Rainy Retreat. Buy them now.
Okay.
We're getting really excited. I hope they sell out fast. So.
Yeah, just a couple of weeks away here. Yeah. June 22nd is when it's happening. It starts at 5:30. It's at the Bridge Building. And that's over a glacier highway, kind of after the high school, but before the turnoff onto Egan,
correct.
Right? Kind of
that's
in
exactly.
that area. Yeah.
Perfect.
And sounds like a fun event. And thanks to Catholic Community Services for all you guys do and every single one of those agencies and all the hardworking people that really make this community a better place to live. We really appreciate that.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
All right.
All right. Here's a bird note.
This is bird note. Bird beaks, or bills, come in many shapes and sizes. And birds use them for just about everything. To collect food, to preen, fight, court, chop holes in trees, weave nests, and more. But in order for a bird to fly, its beak must weigh as little as possible. So beaks have evolved to be ultra-light, like birds' hollow bones and feathers. Just what is this versatile appendage made of? At its core, both upper and lower halves of a beak contain light, bony projections that extend from the skull. These bony parts are covered with a sheath of a tough material called keratin. It's the same stuff that makes up tortoise shells, the scales and claws of reptiles, and our own hair and fingernails. The keratin sheath makes the beak tough, durable, and shiny. The sheath grows continuously because a beak wears down with use. Picture a shorebird, like this black oyster catcher, flipping rocks and hammering shells all day. Ancient birds were weighed down with jaws and teeth, making flight far more challenging. But the beak of a modern bird, whether it belongs to an eagle, toucan, or hummingbird, is a marvel fit for life on the wing. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
The Southeast Alaska LGBTQ Alliance invites you to our annual fundraiser, Blitz Drag Show, June 16th and 17th at Centennial Hall, welcoming RuPaul's Drag Race star, Jasmine Masters, and backed by popular demand, Drag King Spikey Van Dyke. Hosted by singing drag queen, Delighted to Be Here, and featuring a cast of Juno's own drag kings and queens. Tickets on sale now. More information at sigla.org.
Support comes from Northland Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center, information at 789-6780 or at northlandaudiology.com.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. We're going to be talking next to the Chilkat Challenge Triathlon organizer. We've got Gershon Cohen on the line. Gershon, can you hear me?
I can.
How you doing?
Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So the Chilkat Challenge Triathlon, tell me all about it and then how people can get involved.
Well, let's start at the end there and go the other direction.
Okay, sounds good.
If people want to know more about the race and how to register for the race, they should go to www.chilkatchallengetriathlon.com, where they'll find registration materials and all the other information. Basically, the race is about a 40-mile race on or along the Chilkat River. It starts with an 8-mile paddle from Mosquito Lake, about 30 miles north of Haines, and you go through a little slough and then into the Chilkat River. You will finish the paddle at Klukwan at the village and then switch to bikes, ride a bike about 22 miles to Fort Seward Parade Grounds, and then get off the bike and run about 9.5 miles to Chilkat State Park. And the bike and run are down the Haines Highway and all along Mud Bay Road, all along the river. So the race really is, through the Eagle Preserve and all along the river the whole way.
Man, tell me about what's kind of the hardest stretch, or how would you judge that? of course, there's three different events sort of within one. So
right.
I guess I'm thinking in terms of the road stuff. Are you having to go over the pass and do that kind of stuff?
Well, no, it's not like the bike race coming down from Haines Street.
Right, right.
Past, but there are some pretty good hills, and some folks have said that the run is going to be a challenge. More than last year, it is a couple miles longer than last year, and there is one more hill. Some folks are doing it as individuals. I should also mention that. And you can also do it as a two-person or three-person team. If you're, really strong in one area and you have friends that are strong in other areas, well, then maybe that's a good way for you to go. We are allowing kayaks and canoes, and this year, a change from last year, you could have a double kayak or canoe as well. In fact, you could have stand-up paddleboard, and I'm really dying to
has
see
anyone
come down. Nobody signed up for a paddleboard yet, but we're hoping.
I want a
video of somebody going down the Chilkat River on a paddleboard. But the race, we've just about doubled how many folks are going to be in the race this year, and we still have a few weeks to go, so that's great. It's going to be a really popular event as years go by. We have a lot of local sponsors, a lot of Juno sponsors, and then some big national sponsors.
Oh, cool.
Patagonia, REI, Cliff Bar. So folks are looking at this and going, this is going to be an event that will be around for a long time.
Wow, that's cool. How long has it been going on?
This is the second year.
Okay.
Considering that we're only into year two, we're very, very optimistic about it.
Yeah.
The first year went great. We had 45 people in the race last year, and that's pretty good for a first-time outing. And the race is really all about the river. We talk here often about, the jobs that the river provides, in terms of commercial fishing and sport fishing and tourism. And we talk about the food and that it provides for us. But we don't often really actually talk about just the recreational values of the river, which are enormous, and the fact that the Chilkat River is really the foundation of the culture here in Haines. And I think it's really important to celebrate that and, keep in mind that there are very few places in our country and elsewhere where you have a river that is so productive and so clean and so beautiful that runs through a community and provides so many benefits to the community.
Yeah, it's well said. And it is fun to think about doing this thing that is all about exercising and recreating around this really vital core piece of what it means to live in that area.
It is. Folks from Alaska, obviously we're very outdoor-related people. We get outside a lot, and we do a lot of things outside. There's a lot of folks coming from Whitehorse. There are folks coming down from the Anchorage, Mat-Su area. We've got one entry from South Carolina and another one from Vermont. So, people are looking, especially the people from other areas, they're looking at the photos and the little video we have on the website from last year, and they're going, oh, my gosh, this is stunning.
Right.
Where are you going to see scenery like this, in a kayak, racing down a river, and, when you can see moose and bear and there'll be eagles all over the place. It's really a great run.
Yeah, I was going to ask how else, so there's a website, but how are people sort of finding out about it?
Well, we went and contacted folks in various triathlon groups and running groups and biking groups, mostly just around the state and a lot in the southeast, of course. And then we've had articles in the Whitehorse newspapers, the Juneau Empire. We had a little blurb in the Capital City Weekly. And let's see, what else?
So just
word of mouth, social media.
Right, just kind of local news, and it's kind of the old-fashioned way.
Well, and a lot of folks are back from last year, and they're telling folks. I mean, we have one person who's coming back and said they're bringing 8 friends.
There you go.
So,
that's a bump.
That's a little bit of a bump, right? So it's just going to be more and more popular over time. We're trying to figure out how we're going to deal with that, because the launch point from Mosquito Lake is actually tight. And so what we're doing is getting people to leave in waves of 10, and then they'll take off, and then 5 minutes later we'll send another 10. We have chip readers, so folks will all be timed
individually at each
stop along the way. They have their chip read. But we can't even launch everybody at the same time already, and who knows what next year will bring.
Well, that sounds
good. A lot more people.
That sounds like a kind of fun problem to have in a way, fun thing to
deal
with. That'll be really great.
That would be terrible, wouldn't it? Have too many people.
So once again, if people want to get involved and find out more about it, it's at ChilkatChallengeTriathlon.com.
That's great.
And that's Chilkat, Chilkat. And then all the registration stuff and all the other information they need to know is right there.
Everything's right there. One thing I would mention is that there is a mandatory pre-race meeting the night before. Of course, people would have to be coming to town early enough to be there for the start the next morning anyway, but there is a pre-race meeting on the parade grounds at 6 o'clock, and it's really important that folks come to that, and we're requiring that they come to that because, it's last-minute updates on the course and the river, conditions on the river, and so it's a matter of safety. that everybody knows what they're getting into, and we'll have slide presentations and actually video presentations from last year's race, and folks who are running each leg from the steering committee will make short presentations to folks. Oh, and then I should also mention that after the race, when we have our awards ceremony, we're going to have a banquet. We're going to have, meals are part of the ticket for joining the race. It's going to be a great tamale dinner, and there'll be music, and we'll be giving away some great prizes to the winners.
Sounds like an awesome time up there and a great excuse to get a good workout in. All right. Well, Gershon, thanks so much for telling us about it. Have a great race there, the Chilkat Challenge Triathlon. And once again, to find out more information, ChilkatChallengeTriathlon.com is the place to go, and you can find out all about it. Gershon, have a great race, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Andy. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back. Juno Afternoon, Andy Klein with you. And joining me now, Jeremy Shade, News Director for K2 News. Jeremy, thanks so much for coming in.
Sure, no problem.
Let's talk about news that's happened, news that's going to happen, all that kind of stuff. What's going on?
Okay, so obviously we've got a lot of people committed to covering Celebration. There's the 360 North side, so the public television side that's going statewide. That's a contract gig with 360 North and Sea Alaska. That's not our kind of news editorial side.
That's just kind of a live feed going out, showing all the stuff that's happening, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's the long-form stuff that's on television kind of that side of the house is doing. I don't have a whole lot to do with that. But the side that our newsroom, our local guys are working on, they're doing a lot of really cool stuff. You know, David Purdy and Trip Krause are kind of doing a lot of roving reporter stuff. And you can check it out on our Facebook page where, Trip's just grabbing people and doing quick hit interviews and just getting right in there with it. And David's been doing some really cool stuff. He got his commercial drone pilot's license,
okay,
which is
that's
an involved
awesome
thing, a few months ago. So he's been producing some like really cool short videos and incorporate some of the aerial shots. And he's a really solid videographer.
Yeah, he does great work. And isn't there also something that's a kind of a collaboration with Kindred Post and Trickster?
Right, yeah. And then so this afternoon, I think the parts of our arts team are out shooting red carpet concerts, part of that series, but the Celebration Sessions, they call them, in collaboration with those guys, too.
Cool.
Yeah. That's obviously, we got lots of content on our Facebook page related to Celebration, and you can see a lot of these different video snippets if you're not into Facebook. We're also posting them to our Celebration news page, which is just ktoo.org/Celebration.
Very cool. All right. So Celebration, that's one thing going on.
Yeah, so that's a really cool thing going on. Kind of one of the important stories I wanted to highlight that might have gone under the radar from the past week. Elizabeth Jenkins from the Alaska's Energy Desk had this just great story on Mendenhall River erosion threatening some homes out there, and it kind of ties in all these phenomena that we didn't necessarily know. Takes a sort of longer view on some of these phenomena, like Yokel Hops.
Yokel Hops.
The glacial outburst water flows that, have been happening periodically in the summers and the springs.
Come out of the Suicide Basin, typically, up in the glacier, yeah.
Up above the glacier, what happens is, I've had some different hydrologists explain it to me, as water melts, it sinks. Relative to ice is lighter, is less dense than water. So the ice has a tendency to rise. And once it hits some critical mass of water that's collected, it pops up, kind of like a bathtub plug.
Oh.
Ice. And this is, and they call it a glacial dam outburst, is the science-y way of saying it, or the Icelandic way of saying it is a Jokulhlaup. Anyways, those we found out, or Elizabeth found out, is a relatively recent phenomenon, you know? You know, I moved here about 2008, 2009, and they started happening in 2011. It's basically when they started happening upriver from the Menhol River, and we didn't realize. And this, anyways, so a bunch of these homes along the Menhol River are kind of, their backyards are eroding away because rivers are going to river. They carve as they change over time. It's, again, it's a relatively young river. It's easy to forget, too. Because the glacier used to be a tidewater glacier,
yeah,
like 100 years ago or so. These jokulhlaups happen, and they dump all this water down, and they really accelerate some of the, and it's all tied in with, like, climate change. You know, glaciers are going to melt. It's not the Ice Age anymore, but also the pace at which it's melting,
they're melting
is pretty
faster
dramatic.
Rate, yeah.
Right. And so it's like, well, what's the community going to do? And it kind of popped up when I was filling in for Jake Resnick at an assembly meeting, where, you know, there's solutions. Communities have dealt with this before, and they can go out and get a lot of federal matching money, and they can work with the local residents to try to foot a piece of the bill for, like, shoring up rivers, you know. And there's a few dozen property owners. A lot of money on the line. It's like millions of dollars, the scale of millions of dollars. And the match was huge. That was potentially out there between the city dollars and the federal dollars available to help with this. And then the residents would have to put some skin in the game, too, since they're protecting their property. But the process took a long time. You know, it's trying to get neighbors to come up with $80,000 a piece, which is a lot, and you know, it just
money.
Became
yeah.
very divisive, and it just struck me as like, oh man, this is like every climate change public policy debate ever in a microcosm
happening
in the
now.
Menhol River.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and they, ultimately the assembly didn't opt to do it because they, you know, some of the rationales, they couldn't get the neighbors on board, enough of the neighbors on board, and impose this bill. And it's just, you know, you can sympathize with every party, but it's like, you know,
well,
the river's,
yeah.
it's predictable what the river is going to do and,
sure.
and what's going to happen to these property owners, and it's going to keep on carving. So I just think it's really worthwhile to check out. I think it published Monday on KTO.org and was out on the radio Monday and Tuesday. So it's a cool story and worth a listen, and, you know, the public policy issue of the century, really,
yeah.
but in a little microcosm
yeah.
here.
Well, yeah, and
Alaska, so we've got a little snippet we can
sure,
play here.
Let's play that. Yeah, Alaska does seem like the front lines on the climate debate, climate change debate and issue. So let's hear from Elizabeth Jenkins now, this small clip from the Menhol River issue.
At first glance, the neighborhood on Meanderway looks like any ordinary subdivision built in the 1980s. But there's a unique feature snaking along some of the homes' backyards.
Oh, there's more paddlers.
Hello! Welcome to Juneau.
No rain today.
For Joyce and Kirk Gehring, having the Mendenhall River right outside their door was a huge attraction. On their deck, they can see things they couldn't have imagined at their old home in Utah.
We have beavers going up and down the river almost every day. Sometimes we have harbor seals come up the river. I mean, it's just, it's a wonderland.
A wonderland that isn't as idyllic as it seems. Besides paddlers and seals, there's another sight visible from the Gehrings. Down the river, you can see a couple of homes that look dangerously close to the river's edge.
That's Elizabeth Jenkins reporting on the that happens Menhol River and the very serious issue of people's homes. About 12 homes, you're saying?
No, several dozen, I think.
Several dozen homes.
I don't have the number off the top of my head.
Being impacted there by the increased erosion that's happening in Menhol River. And that was a big debate that was happening in front of, as you say, it was happening in front of the assembly, but it is one of these, I think you're right, it's one of these things that, oh, okay, that happened, assembly said no, okay, well, it's not over. It's not over.
Right, right, yeah,
it's
like,
not
what's
over
the resolution here?
It's not
like,
over.
We just let our neighbors' houses fall into the river? Maybe that is the resolution.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, what else we got on the docket here?
Okay, so coming up later, I found out the other day, and this is kind of my little nerd squee as the former Gavel Alaska producer, C-SPAN is coming to Juneau on June 18th and 19th. It's a thing they call the C-SPAN Cities Tour. They it looks like they produce like a lot of kind of profiling information about a community. It struck me, I was looking at their last time they did this, and it was in Fort Worth, Texas. I was looking at some of the stuff they produce, and it kind of reminds me of from the Colbert Report, Stephen Colbert's Better Know a District.
Right.
Except, you know, no irony, just no, totally
just
earnest.
Straight ahead.
Well, they're doing that in Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage later this month. They're going to be in Juneau, June 18th and 19th. Just getting ready to publish their schedule of stops. And then the actual stuff they're producing will end up on television and on C-SPAN.org in July.
Well, there you go, the excitement of C-SPAN right here.
I really wanted to ask them to do like a Q&A with our Gavel Alaska producers,
sure,
and our TV crowds, because, yeah, you know, we have a lot of parallels with what they do on Gavel Alaska and our boring TV of
yeah,
the Alaska legislature.
We'll look for the C-SPAN crews. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, so they say they've got some big busts that's just the ordeal to get their TV and their bus and their crews up here. They plan to showcase a variety of Alaska venues, public officials, nonfiction authors, and local historians. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Very exciting.
Yeah.
C-SPAN happening.
I
like it.
All
right.
Nerdy news.
That's nerd news.
Yeah.
That's nerd news corner.
Right.
and then one other item here?
Yeah. And so out in Bristol Bay, in Naknek specifically this weekend, there's the Bristol Bay Fish Expo happening. We're here. But the especially noteworthy thing coming out of that is Saturday night they've got a gubernatorial debate with all the major candidates. So, Begich, Treadwell, Governor Walker, Dunleavy, Scott Hawkins. I feel like I might be forgetting one or two others. But, I just got a call recently that, Treadwell was the last one that they hadn't lined up, and he's confirmed out there.
It's really shaping up to be one of the more interesting races maybe in the nation.
Yeah.
Right? You've got an independent incumbent governor who was a Republican, was then going to run in the Democratic primary, didn't run in the Democratic primary because a former U.S. senator decided,
right,
to come in. You know, so, boy, there's a lot of elements happening here.
It's going to be an interesting I'm really curious to listen in on this debate. So KDLG is producing it live out there. We'll get a recording of it and turn it around to air on KTOO Monday night is the plan, 7 to 9-ish p.m. on Monday night.
Well, that sounds fascinating as well. Yeah. And what do you think are some of the things people should be looking for in the gubernatorial race? Like, what are some mileposts that you predict? Okay, if this happens, are there things that you're thinking would happen?
Well, you know, the conventional wisdom was, Alaska leans red, and if there's a Republican candidate, you know, the if it was just a heads up fight between a Republican and a Democrat or a Republican and an independent, it would be closer. If it was just one-on-one. But as it is now, where it's split three ways, likely, you know, it's the conventional wisdom is that Mark Begich is going to be the main Democrat. Governor Walker, the incumbent, who's an independent former Republican, but, has a lot of coalitions and allies that probably draw from the same pool that Mark Begich does, they're likely to split the vote and let the Republican have the plurality of votes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit hard to explain in words, but that's the conventional
But interesting
wisdom.
Because both of those candidates certainly have name recognition. They're known across the state. There's many people who've seen that name on the ballot before.
Sure.
Whereas if Dunleavy is the likely Republican candidate, that's someone that maybe a lot of people have never heard of before. So he's got a lot of work to do just to get name recognition as well. So that's an interesting.
And it was interesting, too, just, living in Juneau, you don't consume exactly what everyone else is consuming. But, I was up in Anchorage in April. And it's like, oh, yeah, look at these.
Look at
Dunleavy signs all over their Anchorage. Like, huh. Because my sliver is knowing him from the Capitol. And
well, Jeremy Shea, news director, KTO News, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know about that stuff.
Sure.
I appreciate it. That's the news corner. So we're calling it with Jeremy Shea. Thanks so much,
title
Jeremy.
Title in progress.
Title in progress is what we're calling it. And that's it for a Juneau Afternoon today. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, Andy.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Huna, and K210AS, an excursion inlet in Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.